Well, have you ever watched The Big Bang Theory on CBS? It's a sitcom, and it's funny. But we're not going to talk about that per se. Eric Kaplan with us. We're going to talk about his work. He's one of the co-executive producers, by the way, of The Big Bang Theory. Does Santa exist? Now, you're probably sitting back saying, wait a minute. Does Santa exist? We're going to talk with Eric about that in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Let me tell you a little bit about Eric Kaplan, co-executive producer and writer on the CBS sitcom The Big Bang Theory. Previously, has written for The Late Show with David Letterman, Futurama, for which he won an Emmy Award, The Flight of the Conchords. He graduated from Harvard, majoring in philosophy, did graduate work at Columbia, and he's working on his dissertation in philosophy at UC Berkeley. Welcome to Coast, Eric Kaplan. Eric, my pleasure to have you on the show.
It's a pleasure to be here.
You have a very, very varied career, my friend. How did you end up coming to Los Angeles after majoring at Harvard?
Well, I had been studying philosophy for a number of years at UC Berkeley, but I felt like no one was actually going to read anything that I wrote. So I decided to get a job in the television writer. So I did that. I, as you mentioned, I went to work for David Letterman for a while, and then I moved out to LA for Futurama and worked on some other television programs.
What'd you think of David?
Well, I felt when I first met him that it was like seeing a tiger, because it was a thing that I had only seen on television before.
Yeah.
And then I met him in real life, and that's a weird experience. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you're used to seeing him in the television, and then there he is. I didn't reach out and touch him, but I could have. And that was very impressive to me.
I ran into Robert Duvall last weekend here. And
wow.
Not quite like, you know, what you did, because you worked with David, but he was so approachable and friendly. But he looks different. You know, film, you know, when they work on the makeup and all that stuff, man, they make you look 20 years younger. But he's a talent.
David's makeup made him and suit made him look 85 pounds heavier. He's a lean and almost hermit-like person in person. And on TV, he seems like a jovial and meaty character.
Well, you've got a great hit going with The Big Bang Tango. Were you always a funny type writer?
Yeah. Yeah, I have to say so. I mean, that was actually, you remind me of my interview on David Letterman, because when I came in there, Rob Burnett, who was the executive producer at the time, he knew I was coming from a philosophical background. So he said to me, "Are you funny?" So I said, you know, the wheels were turning in my brain, and I said, "Yes." And then I just clammed up.
And
I thought, that's a funny answer.
That is a funny answer.
If I tried to explain it, it would seem less funny. For whatever quirk in my personal psychology, I've always sort of viewed things from a funny perspective, which is not to say I'm not, you know, as you are, George, capable of deep emotion.
Eric, you wrote a book called Does Santa Exist? And, you know, a lot of people are going to go, whoa, what's his angle here? What's he doing? Tell us how this even happened.
Well, the way it happened was I had a son, Ari, who was about 4 years of age, and he had a friend, and they were going to go to the zoo together. They had a play date, you know, as kids today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Play dates. They were going to go to the zoo together around Christmas time. And Ari's friend's mom called me up and said she didn't want him to go on the play date because there would be reindeer at the zoo. He thought that would lead to a discussion of Santa Claus. And Ari did not believe in Santa Claus, and her son, Skylar, did believe in Santa Claus, and she didn't want his innocent faith in Santa Claus to be shaken. And I thought that was pretty weird, because I thought, wow, Ari, as far as I can tell, he does exist, and as far as I can tell, Santa doesn't exist. And Skylar's mom is giving up her son's relationship with someone who exists to preserve his relationship with someone who didn't exist. So I thought that was pretty interesting. But then when I kind of dug into a little bit deeper, I thought, well, how do I know that Santa Claus does not exist? I mean, I've never seen him, but I mean, George, I've never seen you, and other than a picture, and I presume you exist.
I'm here, Eric, in the flesh, yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't lie to me.
No, sir.
So you exist, and I've never seen you, so not having seen Santa doesn't mean that Santa doesn't exist. And, you know, I mean, even if I went to the North Pole and looked around for him, even if I said I was going to, you know, quit the Big Bang Theory and start searching the poles for this guy, like, and I didn't find him, that wouldn't mean that he didn't exist, because maybe his beard gives out some kind of a ray that makes bends light waves, or maybe I did see him, and then Mrs. Claus gave me some kind of a brain operation, which made me forget about it. So I can't really prove to my satisfaction that he does not exist. And that made me think, well, there's a lot of things in life that may be quite important, but that we don't know for sure if they exist or they don't, and we're sort of two minds about them. And I thought, well, maybe this, although I was entering the topic from sort of the perspective of a Santa skeptic, I thought this might be an interesting way to approach this sort of deeper philosophical issue of how we're supposed to think about things which we sort of half believe in and half don't, or believe in sometimes and not at other times, or believe in when we're in some context talking with some people and not with others. So I thought that was interesting, and I just kind of meditated on that and started looking at our different ways of dealing with these issues.
Knowing that you were coming on tonight, I went back and I did some reading on the great film Miracle on 34th Street. And
right.
I remember that as a kid that, you know, there was no Santa, nobody believed in him, and you know, the judge had a friend who kept looking at him saying, you better say Santa exists. This is going right. to backfire on you. But when they brought in all those letters to Santa, that just won everybody over, and they just dumped them down. So when you take a look at does Santa exist, are you looking at the mindset of people, why they believe and why they don't?
Yeah. Yeah, I am. 'Cause I think in a certain sense, right, you might think that if you believe in Santa, it lets you preserve certain ways of feeling and certain ways of looking at the world, which are valuable. So I think, in a sense, like, supposing we were to start to think to ourselves, wow, if we think too much, that poses certain problems for us. Like, and you know, everybody has their favorites, but let's pick one and say, well, if we think too much, it's hard to enjoy spontaneity. And spontaneity is good, and if, you know, a life where you planned everything would not be as fun as a life where sometimes things were spontaneous. But if you think that too much, if you think, well, I should put in 2 minutes of spontaneity every hour, then you're not being spontaneous. So it's a kind of a good thing to be, but you can't get there by thinking. So maybe the way to get there is by some sort of imaginative leap. Maybe I should believe that, you know, there's a fairy who flutters around my head, and whenever I see that fairy, I'll be spontaneous.
That's right.
You know? So I think there's various ways that we can kind of imaginatively engage with reality that have a lot of benefits, and Santa is one of those.
Well, you know, when my parents would take us to shopping centers, and in those days we didn't have malls, we had, you know, individual stores in buildings, and just, I would remember we would go to two or three stores, Eric, during the Christmas season, and growing up in Detroit, and I'd see three or four different Santa Clauses.
Right.
And I kept saying to myself at an age of 10 or something like that, how can this be? How could there be four different Santa Clauses? I don't understand. So as I evolved, I started to realize maybe there isn't a Santa Claus, but
right.
who's buying
right.
the presents? Who's doing all that? And then I got to a certain age, much older, and I realized that what we're dealing with here, too, is a spirit of belief.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not a physical Santa. Okay, you know, maybe he's not up there at the North Pole like we used to think when we were kids, but there's something within all of us. So my question to you here with that is, those who don't believe in the spirit of Santa, is there anything wrong with them?
Well, they're missing out. You know, I mean, it's hard for me to tell immediately if someone doesn't believe in the spirit of Santa, because they might call it by a different name,
mm-hmm. right?
Because that's one of the things about spiritual realities is, and maybe it's the thing that's true about physical realities also, which is that people call them by different names. And, you know, it could be that somebody says, well, I don't believe in Santa, but they behave like someone who does. So I'm open to that possibility. But just to kind of take your question, you know, on face value, I would say yes, they are missing out on something. You know, there's this concept in, there's a thinker, I don't know if I would call him a philosopher, but a thinker named Isaac Luria, who I like a lot. And he says there's this thing called a partsuf. And what a partsuf is it's a way in which the infinite presents itself to the human mind. Because you figure, you know, our minds are very finite, you know, limited organs. You know, they're basically these sacks of goo
yeah.
in our skulls. And they have only limited abilities to understand things. And then, but reality, well, that's, you know, infinite, and it's infinite in all kind of infinite ways and ways that we don't know. And a partsuf is sort of like the halfway house between our gunky minds and the splendid infinite reality. And I think Santa is one of those, or what you would call a spiritual reality, I think is the same idea.
If you don't believe in Santa, do you think that means you don't believe in God?
Well, not necessarily. Because people have very strongly different views about how much imagery you should use when you think about God.
Right.
And some people are very, very strict about that. And they're just like, you can't, you know, no concepts apply to God and no images apply to God because he's infinite. There was this guy named, I shouldn't use that, that's disrespectful. There was a thinker named Dionysus the Areopagite. And he says, you can only talk about God in negative terms. And he says he's not big, and he's not in space, and he's not material, and that's cool. I have a lot of sympathy for that. But so I think he wouldn't believe in Santa, but he would believe in God. But you know, for those of us who are on less kind of, you know, not everybody agrees with Dionysus the Areopagite, and some people think you can believe in God by these sort of intermediary beings, and Santa is one.
And I'm glad you're pronouncing his name, and I'm not.
You know, and here's the thing, and I feel like, you know, full disclosure to your listeners, I think his name might actually be the pseudo-Dionysus. He might not have been named Dionysus. But that's a conversation for another day.
That's
another guest.
That's another show with you.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Hey, we've got to get some of the Big Bang Tango folks, the Big Bang Theory folks, on the program with you again.
Yeah, it's a beautiful idea. They're an appealing bunch of talented thespians. I mean, you're talking about the cast, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, it's got a little coast-to-coast feel to it. Physicists involved and other people, and it's kind of neat.
Well, we deal with way-out ideas, and we deal with unconventional minds, really.
Thinkers,
yeah. People who ponder and cogitate and so on.
When I was younger, working at some television stations, Eric, in Detroit, Minneapolis, St. Louis, it was just the three networks. That's all we had. And all of a sudden, this explosion with the cable and then the satellite and now internet that can convert to television. I'm on a
right.
television show that's on, it's internet-based, but with, you know, a little tiny device, you can watch it on your flat screen. this diversity of television. I mean, we see what's going on with like effects with American Horror Story, what they did with Breaking Bad and everything else. Is that healthy now that we don't have just the three networks? I mean, there's still the three big ones with CBS, NBC, and ABC. But what do you think of this diversity of cable and everything that's out there?
Well, I think it's great. Actually,
makes a lot of jobs.
I think it's great because I think it means that you know, different tastes and different perspectives can get served.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
You know,
it's like with the cable news people. I mean, you've got various cable news networks. Some are successful, some are tanking. You know, they're all reaching a certain group of people.
Look, and I don't want to criticize the work, the hard work of the people who were doing those shows in the 1970s, but I remember sometimes there were three things on and none of them was worth watching.
There were many times nothing was worth watching.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, of course, you know, go out and play. I mean, I have my own, I think people should limit the amount of time they spend enjoying a passive medium.
I was talking about a couple of weeks ago on the program about how some of the talent of the past, Ed Sullivan, Jackie Gleason, Red Skelton, Jimmy Durante, none of them would succeed today because of this push for younger demos and everything else. They wouldn't make it, would they? I don't think
unless
Ed Sullivan would
be
make
different,
it.
Unless they would be different if they grew up today.
Right, but if they
maybe
were the way they were.
To power, maybe Jackie Gleason's will to power would be such that he would be like a successful YouTuber at the age of 14.
It's amazing, though, how things have changed.
Well, yeah, things change, and we are changed by them, right?
You have to. And social network has done that, too, which I think all adds into your thoughts about, you know, does Santa exist? People's philosophies are changing.
Yeah. I think so. One thing I've noticed is that it seems to me that on the internet, anything that anybody has ever believed, there's somebody you can find who believes it. Like when I was doing this book, I was thinking about Odin because I ran into this character who said, you know, what do you, Santa Claus, he's actually Hearn the Hunter. He's a Norse mythological archetype.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked on the internet to see if anybody still believed in Odin. And there were two competing Odinist groups on the internet. And you know, there's, if you're an Orthodox Christian, there's a group for you. If you're a communist, there's a group for you. If you know, if you follow some ancient Greek system of thought or Taoism, so everybody is sort of together and they're talking to each other. Now, most of the time they're just hurling abuse at one another and making fun of each other. And maybe that's to be expected, but it's still sort of a step forward for the human species that everybody is talking to one another at all. Like, it's amazing because it used to be, you know, some wise man in, you know, a cave somewhere in China would come up with an idea, and some other wise guy in a cave in England would come up with an idea, and they wouldn't know of each other's existence. Now it's like pop, 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 pop. Everybody can kind of share their views, and I think that's tremendously interesting.
It's funny you say Odin. I remember about 100 years ago, Kirk Douglas in a movie called Viking. And he was talking to an oracle, and she's screaming up to Odin for help.
Oh, to Odin. And did Odin help him out?
He sure did.
Well, okay.
He jumped in. Stay with us, Eric. We're going to take this quick break. We'll come back, talk a little bit more about your work, Does Santa Exist, and your television career. And then in the final hour, we're going to take phone calls with Eric Kaplan right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, do you believe in Santa? We'll find out next hour when we take some phone calls. But I'll be back in a moment with Eric Kaplan as we talk about his work, Does Santa Exist? Next. And welcome back to Coast, Eric Kaplan with us, Does Santa Exist? Which is a much bigger story and question than Santa Claus in the North Pole. Eric, when you talk to children, and I know you do they freely admit that they believe in Santa, or do you get some that just say, no, I don't believe in him?
Well, some of them say that they believe in everything. Tooth Fairy, Eagle Bunny,
Leprechauns, you name it.
Leprechaun, exactly. All those beings. Some of them believe in fairies. Some of them don't believe in that. Some aren't sure.
What are we missing? What are people missing if they don't believe?
Well, I think there's an aspect to reality which is generous. And I know I sound like an old softy for saying that, particularly on your show, but there's moments in life where life is very unforgiving and exacting, and you really have to step up morally or you're going to get in deep trouble. But then there are moments when things kind of turn around, and even though you were afraid you were going to mess up, somehow it turned out to be okay. And life kind of turns this more forgiving, generous face to us. And that's what I think you're missing if you don't believe in Santa. You mentioned God before, and I think, people express their spirituality in a lot of different ways. And some people don't believe in any kind of metaphysical God, but they do think there's some kind of ethical requirements to life. And one of the problems with that approach is that if you think that life has ethical requirements, but there's no personality behind them, is you can't be forgiven. I think if you think there are exacting moral standards, you can reach them or you can fail to reach them. But if you fail to reach them, I don't know how you quite move on. So if you can think about Santa or whatever personification of the divine, floats your boat, then you could be forgiven and you could have a moment of grace or generosity.
What does it tell you about kids who try to convince other kids in somewhat of a mean way that Santa does not exist?
Well,
'Cause it
it
sounds like it could be their parents talking.
could be the parents, could be the television, right?
Could be.
Because sometimes the television has a lot of cynical messages, messages that teach the kid to be, I mean, for want of a better word, a wise guy,
Yeah.
right?
I always remember the movie Network, Howard Beale, played by the late Peter Finch.
Right.
Just a classic movie. And it captured, I think, television and what it is, and America's love with television and this evolution.
It's so mysterious, right? Because if people sometimes they worry about what they want to take into their digestive systems, right? Because sometimes you read these things, I don't know if you read them, which says that, whenever you get, peanut butter, it has 9 earwigs in it, and whenever you drink beer, it has 25 mouse eggs in it, or something like that, right? But then, if you think about television, not to speak of radio, but television, that's something you're taking into your nervous system,
Yeah.
and your nervous system is considerably more important than your. I mean, they're both important, right? But if you have a problem with your intestine, sometimes the docs can open you up and they can take out 3 feet of intestine, but they can't take out 3 feet of brain. Your brain gets messed up. That's
That's
kind
it.
of it,
Yeah,
yeah.
that is it. That's so true. Well, you know what? You've kind of approached this philosophically, I think, life philosophically.
Yeah.
Where do you see us going as people these days, Eric? I mean, I think we're in a state of flux. I mean, this Ebola thing, people are panicking, they're running away, airline stocks are plummeting. What's happening to us?
Well, I think technology is empowering the individual, but at the same time, the old modes of social control and kind of communal control are weakening. So we're finding that the individual has a huge amount of power, but it's kind of anyone's guess how that power will be used. And I think we're seeing these kind of massive dislocations at the same time as we're seeing, the overall standard of living is inconceivably higher than it was 1,000 years ago or 500 years ago. So that's what I think is happening. I think, in a sense, like, there's so many people who know so much more now than the smartest man in the year 1000. There's so much knowledge available to everybody. There's so much power You know, we have power. I mean, I used to think that, man, if the Pharaoh of Egypt, if Thutmose the 17th had gotten a can of Pepsi Cola, he would say, this can only be for the king. This is so delicious. And anybody can get it for 50 cents now. It's amazing. But, you know, there is a possibility that we could destroy the earth, or some madman could get to work on the human brain and crossbreed a human with a starfish and conquer the earth. You know, it's more and more what we imagine we can bring to reality for good and for ill.
Can you imagine if Einstein had a computer, the things he could have done?
He probably could have invented even more dimensions.
I think so.
You know, he said E equals MC squared with a computer. Who knows? It could have been E equals MC cubed or even more.
Where do you guys get the material for the television show?
Well, I think the basis of it is a story, you know? And I don't know. Can I mention Aristotle? I don't want to seem like a snob.
Yeah, of course you
can. Aristotle?
That's right.
Okay. So Aristotle said that the basis of a story was that you had to have a protagonist, and then you had to have a reversal of fortune, and then you had to have a removal of ignorance. So basically, if you look at your life, if you want anything, you're the protagonist. And then life is going to send some reversals of fortune your way. Like, it'll be good and it'll turn to crap, or it'll be crappy and it'll suddenly turn great. So that's a reversal of fortune. And then if you pay attention, you can remove a little bit of your ignorance. Not all of it, but a little. So that's a story. So really, you kind of keep your eyes open, and there's stories happening all the time. You know, this morning I woke up, I didn't know I was going to be on this show talking to like millions of radio listeners.
Yeah.
And now I am. It's very exciting to me. So I've had this little roller coaster ride myself.
Or how about me? I'd peruse the Big Bang Theory. I never thought I'd be talking to you.
Right. You didn't think you'd be talking to me. So you had a little story too. So and then, you know, if we get together and we solve crimes, then that's a series, man. That could be pretty good.
No, it sure is. You know, you've got this philosophical background in your life. Do we, as people, do we, you know, act like philosophers anymore? I mean, back in the old days, they were all philosophers. You know, Descartes, and you mentioned Aristotle and Plato, and yeah. We don't seem to have that anymore.
Well, I beg to differ. I think in the past, philosophers were a pretty rare breed. Most people were like warriors or peasants or, you know, priests or you know, shoemakers or something. It was pretty unusual. Most people couldn't even read. And I think now, like, I would encourage your listeners to philosophize, to become philosophers, because like I kind of hinted at before, there's not a single story about what's important in our culture anymore. We get so many different stories kind of blasted at us, sometimes by people who wish us well, sometimes by people with ulterior motives who don't wish us well. And philosophy is sort of this way to kind of like approach all that stuff and try and get a handle on it. Try and figure out a way to live your life with a sense of balance, even though there's a lot of confusing stuff being blasted at you and stuff that you didn't think about that, you know, your parents taught you. And then there's stuff that you learned at school. And then there's stuff you learned by listening to the radio and stuff you learned on the internet. And much of it conflicts and much of it is unclear in terms of like, what does it mean to do with me? Like, supposing I'm like, yes, the universe was created 17 billion years ago by a random action of cosmic vorticism, you know? Well, okay, well, what does that mean? What should I do?
Yeah.
So it's a puzzle. It's a puzzle. And you know, if you're not, if you didn't sign on to just one of the traditional faith traditions, you know, if you're not a Orthodox Apache and you just do the Apache dances and you believe the Apache myths, if you're sort of a modern person and, you know, everything is charging into your brain, I think philosophy can help you make sense of that situation.
Back several years ago, you were in San Diego at the Comic Con.
Yeah.
What do you find that people are so fascinated with that? I mean, because they go wild there. They love those things.
They do. Well, I guess I think, like, it gives you it gives you the ability to escape your limitations. It's an intoxicating kind of freedom, because let's say I'm the office manager of a radiology clinic in Brooklyn, but when I go to Comic-Con, I'm Sheena, Queen of the Jungle.
That's right.
And I dress like that, and I talk like that, and that's pretty exciting, you know, because I don't have to be limited by what people expect of me. I can find something that thrills my heart, and I can be that, and not to mention, maybe I'll meet a Tarzan, you know, we can have a love story, you know. But even aside from that, just the simple throwing off the muddy bathrobe of our identity and putting on a costume is, I think it's intoxicating to people. I think it's liberating.
Some people like that kind of change.
Yeah.
But other people don't.
Well, so, they don't go to Comic-Con.
Are they missing something?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, I mean, I think if any time you do one thing, you're missing something else, right? I learn to play the classical cello, and I had a roommate who played the classical bassoon, and he had to spend 8 hours a day practicing the bassoon.
Oh, my gosh.
So if I decide I'm going to play the classical cello, I'm going to miss the freedom of being a rock and roll guitarist, and vice versa. That's why it's good there's more than one person, I think. Because one person can be the classical cellist, and one person can be the guitarist. One person can be the kooky lady who goes to Comic-Con, and somebody else can be her serious sister who's trying to fight global warming, you know?
So be it. So when they talk about Santa, whether he exists or not, does anybody bring up Mrs. Claus?
Well, she's a fascinating person, isn't she? How did they meet?
How did they meet, and why is she so docile?
Right, and is she docile? Maybe she's the power behind the throne.
That could be.
You know, I mean, I hope they have an active sex life. I mean, it's a children's program, right? So we don't talk about that usually, but I'd have to think that there's a romantic component to the relationship. It's not all about disciplining those elves.
It's not all, or the deer.
No, or the deer. And the flying, talking deer, you know. I mean, they're a little bit, it is a little bit interesting that when we conceptualize other realities, when we conceptualize ideal realities, we tend to think of it in terms of a family, you know? That's like the ancient Greeks did that.
Yeah.
They were like, there's not just one guy. There's the guy, there's the wife, there's his brother. And I think that's something deep. I think that's something deep because we kind of think reality, it has different sides to it. But they're connected. They're interrelated. So I think there's something that the mythical poets who created all this stuff were cottoning onto, which is that there's a familial dimension to the cosmos.
Eric, you're I gotta come out to your site when you're doing one of the shows. I'd love to see you in action.
Well, I'd love to have you as my guest. You could come and see the show. And one of the things that people remark upon is we do the show live before a live studio audience. And then if there's something that doesn't work, we rewrite it in real time. And then we tell it to the actors and they learn it because they're super good at their job.
They sure are.
And then we do it again.
And they're from all over the place too, aren't they? The actors and actresses?
Yeah. Yeah, they are. From the most divergent of backgrounds, from people who have studied theater like a craft, you know, in academic settings, to just wild, raw talents who've never been in a classroom for a second in their lives.
Have you plopped down Does Santa Exist in front of them?
I've given them copies, and actually, Mayim Bialik wrote a very flattering and touching positive thing about it on her blog, and others of them are reading it. So yes, they're reading it, or they have the opportunity to do so.
Well, I think Santa does exist, and he always will be in my heart. That's for sure.
Well, that's beautiful to hear you say that.
And I think I've got my kids thinking the same thing too.
Good. Good.
I wonder that moment when a little kid, I've got a couple little grandchildren,
right.
Little ones. I wonder that moment that some kid in school tells them Santa doesn't exist.
I wonder how that hits good answer them. For that.
Go ahead.
I have a good answer for that. My answer is that Santa wants there to be some kids in the world who will tell your kids that he doesn't exist to make it a little more challenging for them to believe in him. So he sends an elf named a Moselbick to this kid's house and says, you should tell all your friends that Santa doesn't exist, and I'm going to live under your bed until Christmas and make sure that you do.
And scare the living daylights out of you.
Exactly. And then for every kid that this skeptical kid convinces Santa Claus does not exist, the Moselbick gives them a slice of roast beef.
I love it. I love it. Eric, why do we hate clowns these days?
Why do we hate clowns? You know, well, here's a question. Let me answer a question with a question.
Sure.
Have you ever laughed at a clown?
I did when I was a kid, but not anymore.
There's something eerie about them.
They are. They've got these sharp teeth. I don't like the way they look at you, the way they make their little balloons. I don't like them.
And there is a psychological disorder of clownophobia. There are people who literally are terrified of clowns.
Well, it's not like I run away.
No. Well, you wouldn't. You need to show a certain amount of courage.
But I just don't like them.
Right.
At all. Maybe it was Stephen King. Maybe he did that to me with it.
Well, one thing that you could do is if there's someone who you're close to, just have them wear the red nose for a while.
Well,
until you get used to it.
That's right.
Then once you're used to it, then they can put on the white paint.
Patch Adams, whom I know, he does that all over the place. Wherever he goes, he gives out these red noses.
Really? Is he still alive?
Yeah, he's still going strong. I tried to get him on when Robin Williams died. I tried to get him on, but he just didn't want to do it at that time.
I remember what little I read about him. I thought he was just an amazing human being. And then I thought the movie didn't quite capture him. Yeah, and I don't know him. You know him. But is he as great as they say?
Oh, he's funnier. He's funnier. Really? If you pose with him for a picture, you have got to put your finger in your nose. That's the only way he'll pose with you, because he's doing
it. Oh, really?
It. Yeah. So you've got him sticking his finger in his nostril. You're sticking it in your other one, and there the two of you are.
But he doesn't suggest you switch.
No.
Not unless you know him really well.
Not at all. Not at all. Eric, where did people get your book, Does Santa Exist?
Well, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and I guess wherever fine books are sold.
Oh, it's all over the place.
Yeah, it's actually available. It becomes available today.
Did you have fun writing it?
Oh, I had a lot of fun writing it, actually. It was very fun. It was also very kind of healing for me. Because I kind of started to like just kind of it sounds a little self-obsessed, but I got to kind of unwrap layers of myself and kind of think like, why do these things bother me, and why did I get to be the kind of person I am? And I found that interesting, and I found it very fun to kind of go back and forth between the kind of philosophical stuff and the more personal stuff, and to have one illuminate the other. I found that super fun.
Eric, we're going to keep you for an hour of phone calls, okay?
That sounds fun.
All right, super. So when you call, the questions for Eric Kaplan, and why don't you share the story with us when someone told you Santa did not exist? Tell us what it was like for you. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.